ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ भद्रं कर्णेभ्यः शृणुयाम देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभर्यजत्राः अधिपतये नमः
नमः
एक्सलेंट It is a Atharva Sirsha Upanishad. What we have chanted now, Ganapati Atharva Sirsha Upanishad. It is the title. Okay, there are many Upanishads, and one Upanishad is one of the many Upanishads found in the Jnana Kandaha, the end portion of the Vedaha, which is otherwise known as Vedantaha. And we are chanting this. And there are many Upanishads, big Upanishads. This is such a small Upanishad. And this Upanishad is found in the Atharva Veda. Therefore, it is called Atharva Sirsha Upanishad. And this has come from the word Tharvati, means Chalati. Na Chalati, Na Tharvati iti Atharva. Atharvanaha is the one whose mind is fixed in the truth. Fixed in the truth means not, don't think that doesn't move here and there. What does it mean? One who has clear vision of the reality is Atharvanaha. Okay, the Rishi also. And we have, from this Upanishad is from that Veda. Then many, okay, so one such. And this is a worship, this is a prayer, and chanting this is good. Once you know the meaning, as you chant it, it is like remaining in contemplation. Seeing the meaning, knowing the meaning, seeing the meaning, chanting it is remaining in contemplation, being with the truth, being with yourself, for which we should know the meaning. And before we know the meaning, by chanting also we'll have some grace, okay, to be able to understand it later on. So we are chanting, we started chanting. In fact, I started explaining also a little bit. And then somehow I thought, okay, let me do the chanting first, if them get it correctly, then I'll also tell the meanings. Every time we start and we just... we do once chanting, then we go ahead with it. Today's Gita class, I'm not supposed to chant it. I need not chant it. But thought, okay, it's a good prayer, you see. It's good to begin a class with the mantra. This is actually, any Upanishad is mantra. Mantra. This Upanishad reveals the concept of Lord, nature of reality, everything very clearly. So it's also called one of the names of the Lord. It's also presented here as a Ganapati. Okay, lots of varieties of groups of beings is called Ganapatihi. Gananam Patihi, Ganapatihi. That's all. So let us go to second chapter now. Mukam karoti vachalam. Nainam chindal shastrani, nainam dahati pavakaha, na chayram kedyantyapo, na sosheti marutaha, na chedyoy madahyoy, matledyoy soshi evachan, nitya sarvagata sthanahu achaloyam sanatanaha. Avyaktoyam achintyoyam, like this, verses go on till the 29th, 30th, Krishna unfolds the nature of the Self, the Atma, in these verses. We have to always remind ourselves of why we are reading these verses. These verses unfold the nature of the Self. Atma Swarupam, now they reveal. So they reveal the nature of the Self. When we say, we understand the nature of the very reality. When I say we understand the nature of the very reality, means we understand the nature of the reality being the very existence of the entire manifestation, the cosmos. So the existence of the cosmos, that's why we use the word as Sat. This Sat, the existence of the universe. What is that which is known by the term existence? So that without which the universe cannot exist at all is the existence of the universe. The reality, okay, existence of which is the existence of the universe, is the, in fact, existence of the very universe. So that reality which lends existence to the universe, which is the very existence of the universe, cannot be understood otherwise. Okay, has to be understood only as the Chit. The Sat has to be understood as the Chit. Sat is available for recognition, cognition, only as the Chit, as pure awareness. You cannot understand Sat as Sat, okay? You have to understand Sat being the Chit. And you say, how this Chit, the pure awareness, the pure consciousness alone is the Sat, the existence of the universe. Not two different things. Understand? Then, because the Chit is the Sat, the existence of the universe, everything in the universe is not different from, nothing in this universe is different from the Chit, which is the Sat. Like, water is the Sat of the ocean. When we say water is the Sat, the existence of all the waves and every wave, therefore, water happens to be the Sat of every wave. No wave is different from the Sat. Similarly, here, with reference to the entire creation, entire manifestation, entire cosmos, the Sat is whatever, the Chit is the Sat. Chit, the pure consciousness, the pure knowledge, the pure awareness, is the Sat of this entire universe. Therefore, no object is different from the Sat, the Chit, the existence of the universe, which is pure Chit. Therefore, this Chit, which is the existence of the universe, is also Anantam, because there is no object which is different from this. Understand? Like how no wave is different from water, similarly, no object of knowledge is different from, away from the knower, the consciousness. Understand? Therefore, we say the whole Jagat is, everything is ultimately the reality, the Sat. Therefore, this Chit, which is Sat, is also Anantam. Anantam, we say, it is infinite or limitless. When you say, it's also Anantam. And that Sat, apart from that, we say that Sat, which is the Chit, which is also Anantam, that alone is there, that is the only reality. So here that Sat, which is also Anantam, which is available for recognition as the Chit, is in fact Chit, how is the sat available for recognition as the chit? Where is the chit available for recognition as the chit? Available for recognition only as the substance of the substantive I. First person singular pronoun I. It's available for understanding only as the very subject of knowledge. That is why I said last class, previous class, we say knowledge means always knowledge of a given object. So anything which is available for objectification, an object of knowledge is available for direct knowledge or indirect knowledge. You can know about an object directly perceiving, or you can know through some other means of knowledge. You can have direct knowledge of a given object, or you can have indirect knowledge of a given object. Understand? So you can have the pratyaksha jnanam of something. You can also have the paroksha jnanam of something. If you know something directly through perception, if you perceive something, you hear it directly, you see it directly, you smell it directly. Okay, suppose you drink tea and you say coffee is sugar free. It is direct knowledge. If I tell you there is no sugar in the coffee, you can have it. When I say, you still have the knowledge of the coffee not having sugar, it is indirect knowledge. Understand? So you can have direct knowledge, pratyaksham jnanam, not only seeing, okay? I'm saying, you can drink yourself and say, you can have the knowledge that the tea has no sugar. I can tell you also the tea has no sugar. Without even drinking, tasting, you still have the knowledge of the tea being sugar-free because you have it through somebody else. It's indirect knowledge. Understand? So one can have direct knowledge or indirect knowledge of an object which is available for objectification, which can be objectified. But the self, when you say the self, the truth of the mind, okay, the meaning of the word I is not available for objectification because it's an object of knowledge. Therefore, it is not available for direct knowledge or indirect knowledge, but it is available for immediate knowledge. I call it aparoksha jnanam. Pratyaksha jnanam, direct knowledge. Okay, you directly perceive through either of your senses and you have the knowledge of a given object. You see, you hear, you smell, you taste, and you have the knowledge of a given object directly through direct perception. Or through somebody else, through some other source, you have knowledge of a given object, which is indirect knowledge of a given object. But when the self is concerned, self is neither available for pratyaksha jnanam, nor is it available for paroksha jnanam, but it is available for aparoksha jnanam. Na paroksham is what? Aparoksham. Aparoksha jnanam means not indirect. Is it direct then? No, it is neither direct. Then what do you mean by it? It is immediate. Why do you say immediate? Because the self is available for recognition not as an object of knowledge, but available for recognition as the very subject of knowledge. Therefore, understand? We say it's available for aparoksha jnanam. In English, I don't know how to say it. We say immediate knowledge. Immediate means immediacy, the distancelessness of the knower and the known is implied through that. Is it okay? And that self. And we are talking about that. So therefore, what is it which is available for recognition as the self distancelessly for the mind. What is that which is not distant for the mind? What, just as there is no distance between the wave and the water, there is no distance between the thought modification, the antahkarana vritti and the pure consciousness, the chit, which is the sat of the universe. When you say sat of the universe means, I mean the existence of the universe. There is no distance. There is no distance. That's why we say this is the self. It is the self. And that consciousness, when you say it is sat, the very word is sat. When you say it is chit, it is pure knowledge. It is of the nature of knowledge. It is not an action, it is the knowledge. When you say that the chit is sat, it is the existence. When you say it is existence, it is the cause. When you say it is the cause, it is the, not only it is the cause, it is the uncaused, causeless cause. When you say it is the uncaused, causeless cause, you say it has beginning, it is of the nature of beginninglessness. Because it has no beginning, it also has no end, therefore it is of the nature of eternity. It is eternal by itself. Understand? Now we say because it is of the nature of, it doesn't, because it has no beginning and no end, it is not subject to any change. Anything which has a beginning has a cause and also subject to change. It is not subject to any change. Therefore, changelessness is its sarupam. Because this of the, it is not, no, changelessness is its sarupam, it is free from any motion. Motionlessness also it is sarupam. How motionlessness or actionlessness is the sarupam? Because it is, we say, because it is all, how it does not move, why it is, there is no change. For any change to take place, there is some very slightest motion. Some slightest motion must be there, movement must be there. That is not possible. Why? Because it is all pervasive. Because it is all pervasive, because it is of the nature of all pervasiveness. Because it is all pervasive, there is no place where it is not. The moment is not possible. Understand? Because this movement is not possible, we say it is thanuhu, achalaha. You are going to see later on. Shankara says it. Interesting bhashyam is following anyway. But understand? So why it is thanuhu, achalaha? Very interesting. You are going to see all those things. Sthanuhu means what? Firm. Achalaha is unmoving, immobile. So sarva, we say sarva gatatvat, sarva vyapakatvat, due to its all pervasiveness, it is free from motion or it is not subject to any change. Because it is of the nature of changelessness, if we say it is of the nature of motionlessness, actionlessness, therefore it is of the nature of silence. Because of the nature of actionlessness, now we say it is of the nature of what is free from, okay, the self is free from doership, the status of being the doer, the status of being the enjoyer, the status of being the doer, knower, enjoyer, etc. Self is not the doer, self is not the enjoyer, self is not anything. Understand? Therefore, from the standpoint of the known and the enjoyed and the experienced, we say without the enjoyer, okay, without the experience and the experiencer, no enjoyment is possible, no experience is possible. Therefore, the experienced becomes, you know, experienced cannot be there. From the standpoint of the experienced, the known, we say the experiencer, the knower, the enjoyer, the doer is consciousness. But consciousness is not the doer. Understand? So consciousness, the chit, which is the sat of the whole universe, Sat of the universe, which is available for recognition as the pure Chit, is in fact free from doership and free from enjoyership. Does not do any action, nor does it get affected by any action. That is what we say, na hanti na hanyate. That is the meaning of that thing. Understand? So all this. This is not subject, therefore if this, that is the nature, it is indestructible. It's very clear, it cannot be destroyed. And apart from that, whatever is there is now, apart from the self, whatever is there, apart from the self, whatever is there is only mithya. The satyam brahma, the sat of the universe, which is actually the chit, is what? Satyam. Apart from that, sat alone is, what about the manifestation then? Just the nama rupa, it is the mithya. Mithya, when you say it is non-different, non-separate from the sat, not only non-different and non-separate from the sat, the jagat, it has no independent existence, therefore we call it as good as, jagat is as good as an effect. Jagat is karyam, brahma satyam, brahma, understand? Brahma satyam, jagan mithya. Why we say here, why do we say that? Because this jagat has, jagat is not a totally non-existent thing. We cannot say jagat is unreal, nor can we say jagat is real, because it has no independent existence. Therefore, when you can't say it is neither real nor unreal, and we have to use a different word, which is as though, is mithya. Understand? The Brahman, Satyam, the Sat, Chit, the Sat which is the Chit, is not the Jagat, but this Jagat, this universe is nothing but the Sat. Understand? Mithya is nothing but Satyam, but the Satyam is not the Mithya Jagat. Therefore, and this Mithya Jagat, when you say Mithya Jagat means other than consciousness, everything else is Jagat. The entire, okay, other than the knower, the consciousness, the Chit, which is of the nature of knowing, the pure knowledge, everything else is an object of knowledge, of consciousness. Understand? Everything else is evident to the self. Okay? Evidence is consciousness. Evidence is consciousness. Everything else is evident to the self. Therefore, the evident is the object of knowledge here. So, the mind, start from the mind. Mind, the knowledge that I am, then all different states of mind are all objects of knowledge. All the minds are objects of knowledge. Then all the prana and everything, the entire jagat, the gross and subtle, which is available, which is within the realm of the jagat, is what? Mithya, when you say, it is subject to change. That change is said to be the relative destruction or the death. Understand? Therefore, all these physical forms, the gross forms and subtle forms, which are objects of knowledge, are subject to change. They are of the nature of constantly changing. That is how they are. Okay, these things have been, and the second thing not being not there, there is no second thing to be harmed by another second thing, for the self to be harmed, or the self to harm also. The self can neither harm, nor can it be harmed, because there is no second thing to harm or to be harmed, other than the self. That is why na hanyate sharire hanyamane. Understand? Then, one more thing we say here, therefore one who knows this, now we are coming, we have understood the nature of the self being such. Now we are talking about the person who knows this fact of the self being the self being the chit, which alone is the sat of the entire universe. If a wave happens to know, okay, the sat of the wave is the water, then that wave also knows the same sat is the sat of the all other waves in the entire ocean. That truth also becomes understood. Therefore here the sat of the universe is our shastras help us to understand this. You cannot know sat other than otherwise no, you understand sat as the chit. Then this chit, sat of the universe is understood. Definitely you understand this, you know the nature swarupam of it. One who knows this swarupam of the Atma being the chit, and knows the swarupam of the this chit being, chit is of the nature of actionlessness, then when he identifies himself with this swarupam of the Atma, like when you say the wave is the substantive and the substance which has the substantiality is the water. Understand? Because the wave, the nama, the name of a given form has no meaning without the water. Therefore, what is that which has substantiality? Does the substantive wave has the substantiality, or the substance water has the substantiality? What is it which has substantiality? Does the substance or the substantive? It only the substance has the substantiality. Why? Because the substance, the water, can exist independent of being, independent of the wave. Whereas the wave cannot exist independent of the water. Therefore, we say water alone has the substantiality. The substantive has no substantiality. Therefore, substance of the substantive wave is water. Similarly, please listen carefully. It is very difficult to understand this bitter truth. The I has no substantiality. I is only a substantive. Okay? And what is the substance of the substantive I, which alone has substantiality, is chit, the pure consciousness. This is satyam. This is the fact. Okay? Then you can say, oh, we cannot say wave is not there at all. Is the wave really there? No, wave is as though. Wave is not really there. What is wave then? Wave is there as though. This wave is nothing but water. Where is the wave? Understand? There is no really wave. Wave is as though. What is there is only water. Similarly, we have to digest this fact. There is no really I. Okay? I is in fact as though. I don't say I, there is no I at all. You don't need to say I am not there. If we talk like that, then we will be sent to a different place of a different special treatment. We can't say I am not there at all. It's only a fact to be understood that there is no such thing I really. I am. Okay? Or you can say the substance of the substantive is chit. Then you can say I the self am the chit. Sat-chit ananda atma, I the self am the pure consciousness. I the self am the consciousness, you can say. Like how the wave can say, I the wave am the water. Understand? Like that you can say. That is what is the thing. Therefore, when you say, when you resolve identity like that, as I the self am the pure consciousness, when you have when you have understood I is only the first person singular, this first person singular pronoun I is only the substantive, okay, substance which has borrows its existence from its substance, the chit, like the namarupa wave borrows its existence from where? Its substance. The substantive wave borrows its existence from its substance, water. Similarly, the I, the first person singular pronoun I, the substantive, borrows its existence from chit, the consciousness, the pure consciousness. Therefore, and this consciousness, is it the doer then? No. Why? Once the person who has understood the substance or the substantive I being pure consciousness, which is of the nature of actionlessness, and he has resolved his identity there with the consciousness, then he cannot say, I am the doer. He cannot say, how can he say, I am the doer? How can he say, I am the doer? How can he say, I am the activator of all these things? Understand this word, Swarupa Avadhanam. Swarupa Avadhanam means what? Swarupa Avadhanam, Swarupa Avagamanam. You understand this nature of this chit, understand as actionlessness, it is Swarupa of the chit. You understand it. Then you understand Avagamanam, Avadhanam, okay? Then Anusandhanam. You repeatedly see that what Swarupam of the self, how consciousness is free from doership. Therefore, if I say, okay, I the self am the consciousness, if I have discovered, then how can I say I am the doer? For you to say I am the doer, you must have your identity with the body or the mind or the senses. It does not mean you should not have identity with the body mentions complex. You should very well have the identity with the body mentions complex, but in understanding you should know, really speaking, self is not the doer. The doer is the self. Why? Because no doing, no action, no performance, no perception, no knowledge can take place without the consciousness, without the self. So, the knower, self is not the knower, but the knower is self. Why? Because without the self, knowing cannot take place. No, self is not the perceiver, but the perceiver is the self, because without the self, the perception cannot take place. Self is not the seer, but the seer is the self, because without the self, the seeing cannot take place, hearing cannot take place, smelling cannot take place, tasting cannot take place, no function, no perception, nothing can take place. Without that. Therefore, self is free from doership. Self is free from enjoyership also. Once the self being free from doership is understood, what self is free from enjoyership also. There is no punyam, there is no papam. There is no agami, there is no sanchitam for the self. So that's why such a person, this word is understanding, okay? Understanding the swarupam of the self being actionlessness. Okay, and then having understood, how can one say, katham hanti, katham ghatayati? How does he kill? How does he cause one to kill? How does he claim oneself to be the doer? How does he claim oneself to be the activator of something, some action? How? Then who does he kill? When he sees such a person, next question comes. The person who has understood the substance of the substantive being, the pure consciousness. And Hatchet person also knows the same chit. Please listen. The chit, which is the substance of the substantive, I is the substance of the all the thoughts, the substance of all the minds. Understand? All the substantives. The same chit, substance of the substantive, I is the substance of the all the substantives here, ultimately. Such a person, he cannot see a second thing being there. This is very important. When he does not see a second thing other than the self, okay, then who does he kill? To kill another person, to affect another person, to victimize another person, you know, then he must see a person being different from other than himself. A second thing must be there. Only then, kam hanti, does he kill himself? Kam ghatayati, who does he, you know, activate in action? Kam hanti, kam ghatayati. It is impossible for him. Why? Because he does not see a second thing. For the person who cannot see a second thing other than the self, cannot now victimize, cannot activate, cannot kill. And so that is very important. These words talk about a jnani. Yaha yenam, no, ajam, avyam, anashinam, avinashinam, veda. So, kam hanti, kam ghatayati, katham hanti, katham ghatayati. How is it possible? Because he does not see. Though he sees the forms, no different form. He sees the unity in diversity. Really, it is not simply talking. No? It's only the resolve. Once your mind is resolved in reality, and you can see that everything, the second reality being not there. It can be as clearly understood as the waves are seen and understood. Therefore, kam hanti, kam ghatayati. So here, one point I have to say extra, because not only this jnani is free from doership, he is also free from enjoyership. So being free from doership results in, also is what implies being free from enjoyership, which is really real freedom. Being free from doership, thereby being free from enjoyership, is what real freedom. What do we mean by freedom? He is free from both. He is free from the mind. Understand? Being free from enjoyership implies he is free from the mind. He is free from the mind. His mind means he can objectify his mind. Understand? Therefore, he is free from guilt, he is free from hurt, and he is free from all pains, all problems. He is free. And he can remain unaffected by the prarabdha, going through the prarabdha, but he is free from agami and sanchita. Understand? And that is when the mind is resolved, that person. Once the mind is resolved, then the senses also can be resolved. As long as the prarabdha is there, that person has to be alive. As long as prarabdha is there, the person will be alive. When the prarabdha gets over, what happens? Mind will be resolved for good. Once the mind is resolved, the sense powers also will be resolved. Nothing happens, not destroyed or anything, resolved. Once the sense powers are resolved, the sukshma is resolved for good. Then once sukshma is resolved for good, then assuming another body is not possible. Therefore, he is free from being born again. That is what is liberation of soul after death. Okay? That we call it as what? Videha Mukti. Okay? That is possible only if a person has Jivan Mukti. One must be free while living. We are not interested in talking about the Videha Mukti and liberation of soul after death. Don't need to worry about it. And it's very frightening. People are not interested. Oh, I want to come again in another form and then I want again enjoy life. People will be scared. But understand, people don't like the idea of not being born again. Really speaking, if you want, okay, if you are free and you are free for good, okay, if you are not free now, there's no, people want, I want to be free now, but okay, again I want to be born again. It's all, this what, this lack of understanding of the concept of moksha. Whether you want to be born or not, even the slightest desire, okay, that's all, there's no moksha. Therefore, whatever is there, whatever paravda is there, whatever sanchitam is there, listen carefully here. Whether sanchitam is there, agami is there, what happens to sanchitam and agami? What happens to that? See, you must be there for you to have sanchita and agami. The possessor is not there. How can the possession exist independent of the possessor? Understand? The doership gone, enjoyership is gone. May God, sanchita agami also resolve. Okay? Therefore, such a person, one must be free from enjoyership. The person who knows the self as avinashi, avyayam. Okay? Atma is avyaha, atma is anashi, atma is, okay? Such a person. Kam hanti, kam ghatayati, katham hanti, katham ghatayati. Na. Why? Because he's free from doership, he's free from enjoyership, he's free from smallness. Okay? For him. He's free from all problems, he's free from inadequacy, he's a person of fullness. Okay? Therefore, he, really speaking, he knows the mithya is satyam. Therefore, he doesn't see a second thing other than the self. Therefore, he is free from all these things. He cannot do anything. This is what is implied. You want to ask anything in this?
Give me the meaning. I want to write down the meaning of sanchita and
okay.
English.
Yeah. Sanchitam. Karma phalam. When I say, listen carefully, the word karma is a neutral gender word. Therefore, we have to say sanchitam karma. Not only that, it's not karma phalam here. When I say karma, I mean the karma phalam. Fruits of actions which remain accumulated without having been exhausted is called sanchitam karma phalam. And we don't need to know when we began, when did we begin to start accumulating. We don't need to ask all those questions. Today we are here, that is enough proof for us to know that we are here because we have, okay, we have it in our account, so we are here. It's enough. So we say, ansanchitam karma phalam. So this beginningless life, now in the beginningless, endless cycle of births and deaths, we have accumulated many, we have done many karmas, and because the karma, every karma definitely produces karma phalam, and the karma phalam is of the nature of fructifying, nature of taking its own time to fructify. You can't expect the karma phalam to take place, you know, as you want it. Because of its nature of taking its own time to fructify, and all the karma phalas do not get exhausted immediately, and the karma phalani, the fruits of actions, remain without being exhausted. Such, before the life ends. So before the life ends, you might have done many karmas, and you might have accumulated the many karma phalani, the fruits of actions, which still remain without getting exhausted. And those accumulated, accumulated results of fruits of actions, which have yet to be exhausted together, it's called sanchitam karma phalam. Accumulated, unexhausted fruits of actions stored and collected in many janmas. We don't need to know the date of the details of the dates. Okay, just we have sanchitam. And always one portion of sanchitam. We cannot exhaust the entire sanchitam in one life. One small portion of sanchitam, is begun to be exhausted. One portion of sanchitam is exhausted in a given life. The portion of sanchitam which is started, which is begun, is called prarabdha. Arabdha or prakarshena arabdham. That means inevitably, choicelessly, unavoidably, which has been started to exhaust, is what? Prarabdha. Arabdha or prarabdha. Prarabdha karma phalam. The present life is what the whole present life, the present birth, the present death, the death of the present life, birth of the present life, and in between all the contacts, all the rubs and frictions, all the pains and pleasures, all those we stumble upon, including one small mosquito which is waiting for you to bite in India, is also already ordained, I tell you. Everything. Why understand the whole thing? I tell you, if you have nothing to do with the person, Paradham is not there, you will not stumble upon this person. You know why he has come to that class today? Why you are sitting here? Why I am here? Why I am eating in Anna's flat and eating for Spanish person's food every day? No, why? Prarabdha. Hers as well. Her prarabdha, my prarabdha. See, prarabdha works. It's amazing, isn't it? Do you think I would have wouldn't have imagined coming, crossing the ocean? Especially me, for the amount of protected life I lived, sheltered life I lived, for the conservative background I'm from, I wouldn't have imagined coming here, living like that. Understand? Purely part of them. Therefore, and all that. Understand? We have to come together. We have to be together. Only then we can contribute for our pains and pleasures. If I'm unknown, I'm a stranger to Rajniji. How can I cause pain and pleasure for him? Unknown person, stranger. There's hundreds of people are walking here, are living in this country. They cannot be a source of object, pain or pleasure. I have nothing to do with them. I don't need to deal with them or handle with them. We only contribute. Understand? That's why any association is ultimately for what? For us to contribute for our pains and pleasures. That is how we set to account with Bhagavan. Anyway, so this prarabdha. Prarabdha is what? The one exhaustion of the karma phalani, the fruits of actions, which are exhausted, the pain, especially pains and pleasures which we go through in this life, while living this life, understand, is in fact the prarabdha karma phalam. So one portion is exhausted here. You are born here, you are living, you are doing karma, but for all that you do, whatever mind state you have, whatever the pain or pleasure, how you feel, the desirable state of mind, undesirable state of mind, all sometimes you feel low, or you feel exhausted, excited, all these things is what? Different states of mind, that is how Prarabdha works. And for the present life, the present situations are only nimittam, instrumental for what you already have, in the Prarabdha account, but only surfacing. That is why no pain is new. Pain is always old. Understand? Pleasure, it's already there. Any pain one has in one's life, okay, is already there. It is dormant. It only surfaces when the time comes. Understand? That is what is prarabdha. Understand? At the time comes, the pain surfaces. What is dormant, latent in you, and the subconscious that surfaces. For that to surface, for that to be triggered, you need a nimittam. Understand? The present situation becomes a nimittam which triggers, okay, thereby the old pain surfaces. But we think, this is the situation because of which I have this pain. We think. And the present situation, it's a pleasure also, we mistake, oh, this is because of this I'm happy, because of this I'm unhappy. That's not true. Of course, the atmosphere also makes it conducive to that. Really speaking, this is the present situation, it's not at all direct cause. It's only nimittam, instrumental. This is a very subtle fact. We don't really understand it.
Nimittam is the trigger. It's only the
instrument,
trigger.
That which is instrumental. Nimittam means instrumental. It becomes instrumental. Means what? Not the karanam. Instrument means again you think karanam. Instrumental means that becomes nimittam, instrumental for the something to be triggered. Understand? So this is a prarabdha you live. So while exhausting your prarabdha, whatever karma, so while living this life, again you are doing karma, again in conformity with your karma, well, how your karma, how much, how righteous you are, how ethical you are, how much you pay attention to values, etc. In conformity with the karma, you again accumulate punyam, or only papam, or both punya papam in different proportions, we accumulate. The present, while exhausting the prarabdha karma phalam, while living this present life, what you accumulate again newly is going to come as agami karma phalam. Bhavishyati kale agachati. Iti agami. What, baby?
How can you then, how do people become self-realized then? If you're always acting on previous karma, how do you get better?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to tell now. I'll tell you. This is, So this is agami karapala, because people have a confusion. I wanted to be very, very clear about the sanchita prarabdha agami. Okay, well, exhausting the prarabdha, you accumulate agami, and always agami will join what? Sanchitam. One small portion is exhausted as prarabdha, and a new agami joins the sanchitam. Sanchitam becomes the same. The deposit never becomes reduced, okay? Mm-hmm. Understand?
Mm-hmm.
Punaha. Understand? So we say this is what, that's why it's called bondage of karma. Listen now. That is why, see, you understand your helplessness. This is what we have to understand, our helplessness. We're born here, we're doing karma, we have sanchitam, we're exhausting prarabdha, helpless, there's no way of not accumulating the agami. No way of, see, you can't remember without doing any karma. You have to do the karma. It's impossible. Once you do the karma, right or wrong, you accumulate punyam or papam. And punyam papas are there, agami. Again, as long as you do the karma, you will accumulate palani. As long as you have fruits of actions, you have to exhaust them. Not you. I mean, they have to be exhausted. And in order to exhaust them, again, coming into being again is important. Birth is inevitable. This is what is called this bondage of karma. Karma bandaha. Even karma phala bandaha is karma bandaha. Bondage of action. Bondage of karma, sorry. Karma binds means what? Bondage. What is real bondage? And freedom from this bondage of karma is what? Freedom. Listen. real freedom. How can you free yourself from this bondage of karma? Not by not doing an action, not by doing an action, but by knowing. Understand? What you need to do, what you need to know? Self. What you should understand? You understand the self being free from doership and enjoyership. Understanding the self being free from doership and enjoyership is the only way to be free from bondage of karma. Not by exhausting it. Not by, you know, yeah.
Whether I understand or not, is that not also part of the parabdha karma?
Not understanding.
If I understand, or my ability to understand, is that also part of the karma that I have?
I can say some punyam. Even if you're inclined to know, okay, your inclination to know, and some punyam you have, some parabdha, some karma is there, some punya karma is there. That's why you're stumbling upon somehow. Some punyam is there, yeah. But we can't say people who don't come for this because of the parabdha. Even to be inclined to know, etc., one should have some punyam, which is parabdha. Somewhere you must have started. Somewhere. Otherwise it's not possible. Somewhere. See, this the urge for knowledge, the urge for the self, urge for the truth is always inborn. It is very much there. Okay? Everyone has. Everyone is driven by one's own urge. And you go to different things and searching for that. That drives us. It chases us. And you're chased and driven all over. And then somehow you stumble upon something, this. And then people go on there, they sit in meditation, they do a lot of things. And they do. That is why, you know, this is the urge, which, you know, all these people who go for different types of big things. No, I want to go around here, I want to do this. Anything big, adventurous, why people want to do all the adventurous things? It's all because they're driven by the problem of this urge, in fact. Not knowing what to do. You do so many things. And that urge is natural. That is why you go to something else. And then sometimes, because of your punya karma also, because of your goodness and ethical life, clean life, prayerfulness, a lot of things. Suppose if you live as a clean, good ethical person, a person of values and all that, so that also helps you to come to this. Even if you didn't do anything big. Simply. All one must have some punya to come to this, to be inclined to know. And one cannot come to this. That is that. That is why we say this bondage of karma, not by doing you cannot become free. Not by starting to do also you cannot become free. Na karmanam anarambhate. A karma karanena, or by doing, or not by not doing, you can't attain moksha, freedom from bondage. Or simply by doing it, do, and exhaust everything. When will you exhaust? The more you do, the more you accumulate. It does not mean that you should not do. Okay, don't be lazy. Shaf does not say we should be lazy, we should be idle, we should be workaholic. We should do, we should manage, we should plan out, and we should be doing what has to be done. Our kartavya, you know that what has to be done will be doing, but how you do it, but you know. Once you know, this is the ultimate thing, the knowledge. It is the knowledge. It's all the problem is centered on the I, self. I. As long as you think you are the doer and you are the enjoyer. As long as you think you are the enjoyer and you have punyam and papam. You accumulate punyam papam. And you have to, how can you, not by simply saying, oh, I'm not the doer, I'm not the enjoyer, I'm not the body. By simply saying it, you cannot be free. It has to be understood. Oh, what exactly mean, huh? You understand what exactly is the self, how the what is substance of the substantive I. Oh, there's no such thing called really speaking, there's no I. I is as though in fact really speaking. And how it is free from doership in understanding And once you can resolve identity with reality, then you can say, okay, the self being, when you understand the self being free from doership and enjoyership, for which you need to know the self is of the nature of actionlessness. Understand? Only then you can say, okay, hacha person is the being free, freeing oneself from the notion of being the doer. Freeing oneself from the notion that I am the doer is freeing oneself from the notion that I am the enjoyer. That is how one can free oneself from bondage of karma.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So, one who has attained moksha, one who is free from this bondage of karma, in, say, a particular lifetime, say you or Swamiji, the only difference is the vision. The only difference is the understanding of
yeah,
the self.
Yeah, just the vision, yeah.
So it's still the same, still things happen.
Yeah.
But it's not prarabdha because, in other words, the only difference between going through life and having prarabdha and not having it is just understanding.
Yeah, see, the prarabdha is acceptable for a jnani. The prarabdha is not acceptable for an ajnani. Once you accept it, it's no problem. Prarabdha becomes acceptable for a jnani. Understand? Second thing, prarabdha, even though it's unacceptable, still it is, it can be unaffected. You know, one can be unaffected. Yeah. He can remain, or the jnani can remain unaffected by the prarabdha.
Still happen.
Okay, it just become reactive. Because of the acceptability. Because he can accept it, prarabdha. And how can he accept? Because he has the objectivity. I tell you, a jnani who is free from doership and enjoyership has perfect objectivity. He goes through prarabdha, so he can remain unaffected because of his objectivity. He has not internalized. And he can accept it. Accept it, he has objectivity, so he can accept it, he can remain unaffected by it.
He sees the truth.
Whereas the ajnani, he is subjective, everything internalized, you become affected by that, prarabdha. It's a vision, that's that difference. And you cannot know how the other person is free or not. We don't need to know, in fact. Let us take care of our own selves. We try to know whether other person is free or not. We don't need to worry about it. Vastram says, you don't need to worry about how much other person. Don't try to know the length of the depth of the vision of other person by being a vibrometer, okay? We want to see where that person comes, I feel a vibration. Now, I go somewhere, I feel the vibration. We don't need to be vibrometers, trying to know, okay, what vibration causes and all that. Really speaking, Shastram says, you just mind your own business. That means what? You take care of yourself. You protect yourself. You protect yourself. The very effort to protect anybody else is because of the pressure. That pressure itself is because of your inadequacy. So you protect yourself, you take care of yourself, and then you see everybody is already protected. This is really satyam. Shastram says, that charity begins at home means what? People don't have very, very, very little meaning of the sentence. You first protect yourself. It does not mean be selfish. Be intelligently selfish. See, the one who is intelligently selfish is also interested in the well-being of others. Naturally, the person's life itself will become like that because of your commitment to dharma, values, all those things. Okay, Richard, do you want to ask something?
Yeah, the nature of action then becomes a bit mysterious. You said that self is without action.
Yeah.
So the question is that you want to ask, well, what is action? I mean, there's no question there is something.
What is action?
What is it?
You mean the karma phalam or the karma?
Karma.
Karma. Yeah, karma is expression of the desire or the urge. Expression of desire. And there also natural urge. So I told you already, expression of desire, expression of urge is in fact karma. When you the desire has to be fulfilled. And the urge has to be really addressed. The cultivated desire can be fulfilled, need not be fulfilled. So even then, the cultivated desire also, if it impels you to do something which is not adharma, not wrong, as long as all your actions which you need to perform in order to fulfill your desire, they are in conformity with the values, there's no problem. You're allowed to do the karma and you can fulfill that desire. And sometimes you withdraw from those actions sometimes because that action involves you in something wrong which is against the values. Then that is when you manage your desire. That's what is called managing one's desire. You manage your desire sometimes. You don't fulfill your desire. Most of the time, the intelligent person will try to fulfill his desire by doing the right action. When he understands he cannot do the right action in order to fulfill his desire, and he has to go against the values, to fulfill his desire means, then that is when he refrains from such an action. So refraining from a wrong action which is impelled by his own desire for something is in fact managing one's desire. An intelligent person can manage. For a person to be able to manage one's desire, to refrain from the wrong, to do only the right, one should have purushartha nischaya, one should have the value of knowledge, one should know the importance of becoming mentally pure and steady. All these things go. One should have the value of values. A lot of things are there. You can either manage or you can do to fulfill. But you don't need to, you can't manage all your desires. They're meant to be fulfilled. And similarly, the natural urge, cultivated desire, either you can fulfill by doing the right action or you can manage them by refraining from wrong actions. That's all. Right action, you can always do it, no problem. Then, the natural urges, you can't manage. You fulfill them through righteous means. Right here, there again, the urge also has to be fulfilled. That's why you had to maintain yourself. You had to fulfill your... So fulfilling your natural, biological, physical urges. Suppose hunger, you had to feed stomach. You had to drink water. For which you need to do karma. And that those actions you do to earn a livelihood, to address your natural urges. Whatever you do should be right. Right, yes. That is why Shastram recommends one has to earn one's livelihood through righteous means. One has to do something or the other. That's a karma. Karma is expression of the need. That's why it's dharma. See, fulfill, appeasing your hunger, quenching your thirst is important because that's how you are in tune with dharma. And we are doing it. And for which you need to do karma. That is why it is dharma. Doing one's duty, earning one's livelihood, okay, not being a parasite. Especially this girl, really, we should not help make people parasites. Mm-hmm. They have to do something or the other to enjoy a little bit of it. If you have nothing to do, means how can we say that? If you go and walk and clean something, why can't we do something? Something one has to do to eat for the food one is eating. Just going to the council office is sign to sign, that is the karma, only karma they do to get some money. Many people. Then you make parasites, means you are going against, you are rubbing the order. Without doing any karma, understand? Simply without earning or doing anything for livelihood, simply eating and drinking means we are disturbing the order. One has to do something or the other to earn one's livelihood, to fulfill one's natural urges. That is dharma. That is why karma is dharma. Dharma is not only karma, but karma, performing, doing certain duties to fulfill the natural urges, to earn one's livelihood, is a karma which is dharma. It's also part of dharma. Then, but that's okay. Then satisfaction, dissatisfaction, that is our parapta, our parapta. That's all. Something. Whatever one has the capacity, whatever skills and capacities one is blessed with, everyone is blessed with adequate, enough. Now some skills, some knowledge, some strength, some clarity, something to do, some buddhi. Bhagavan has blessed all the human beings, all the minds with some buddhi to live, to think, to do, to approach, to be exposed. Nobody can say any excuse in this matter.
Except the disabled. Except the disabled.
Yeah, disabled means, again, being born disabled itself is a prarabdha. That's the papam. And they need, disabled means then, disabled means what? Once you cannot be by yourself, that's again prarabdha. So you are at the mercy of many other people, many others help. That's okay. That is what I'm saying.
So once you achieve this vision, you're still going through the prabdha, which was the sanchitam, but you're not accumulating any more agam.
No, sanchitam also will not be there. Agam also will not be there. The present prabdha has to be exhausted.
Just the present, which usually is within that lifetime.
Yeah.
Okay.
But even then, that prabdha does not affect.
Right.
The person who knows.
Because you see not the as though, you see the truth.
No, because of the objectivity.
Right.
It's acceptable because of the objectivity. Understand? And also because it doesn't affect. It doesn't affect. If you don't internalize, it doesn't affect you. Mm. Only if you think, I have, then it affects you. You're affected by a karma phalam, only if you think, I have it. That's what is internalizing. Because of your vision, you have objectivity. You don't subjectify. So that is why, in fact, the whole shastram is to, the Gita study and all that, is just to help you how to be objective. It's not, and then the complete objectivity is not by teaching some psychology, be objective, not like that. Given the clear vision, really teaching what is subject and what is object. How object is nothing but the subject is not the object. Understand? You have to show the distancelessness and the non-difference between the subject and the object. And thereby you have to see the oneness of the subject. And you have to also make, thereby help the, you can understand how to be objective. That objectivity is different here. Because the objectivity is taught in psychology also sometimes. They teach this in psychotherapy courses and all. They have certain things, lessons. But mechanically taught how not to internalize and all that. Still it won't work because there's no solution not properly given there. It will be helpful to some extent. Anyway, is it okay, Richardji? Have you answered? Not? Satisfactory answer or not?
For the moment.
Spanish Mahodhya? Kas sandeha bhavatam? What is the doubt you have? No doubt.
There are three Purushas. Yes?
Yeah.
Pratama?
Yeah.
Madhyama?
Yeah.
Uttama?
Yeah.
When one speaks of I,
yeah,
is that Pratama?
Uttama Purusha.
Uttama.
Because aham uttamaha, all of this are dushtas, anuttamas.
Punaha vadatu.
You can say that.
So the knower and the known.
Yeah.
The knower, when identified with this mind, body, and senses, is pratama. Not
see. When generally you say.
Uttama is the ultimate.
Yeah. Actually, when you say
the known.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
No. Simply, in English, how we have is a first person, second person, third person.
Yes.
Well, generally we say, okay, I, you. Then like that we say Uttama Purusha, Madhya Purusha, okay, Prathama Purusha. Prathamaha, Madhyamaha, Prathamaha, Dityaha, okay, Uttama, Madhyamaha, Uttamaha.
I think positive degree, comparative degree and superlative degree.
No. He talks about the persons.
Superlative.
He talks about the persons. First person, in Sanskrit language, we don't say Tritiya Purusha. Okay? Prathama Purusha, Madhya Purusha, Uttama Purusha. Okay? We say that.
But the question relates to the Gita. When Krishna speaks of Purusha, in one verse, he speaks of Karsha, Akarsha. And then he says, better than. He speaks about the Akarsha. Karsha being beyond, being Paramata to the Karsha.
Pramata.
Yes. Yeah. But then he says that the third Purusha is better than. Uttama? Better than?
In fact, all the Purushas are okay. We don't. In Jnanam, we resolve all the Purushas. In Jnanam, in knowledge of the reality, all the Purushas are one and the same. All the second person, third person, first person, all are one and the same. Understand? These differences are all relative, not the absolute. In knowledge, there is no such thing. Why we have to say, why do we need to use the very word I at all here? Why do we need to say object and subject? Anything other than the I, okay? Everything indicated, even the thum also, you can say idam, nearest, nearer. And you come near, then nearest is the I. The second person also is object of knowledge. Third person is also an object of knowledge. Understand? And you come to the first person, and first person, you come to the first person, there again, what is the first person? And you reduce everything as object of knowledge. Everything is an object of knowledge, and what is left behind? Who is actually the person? What is the person there? Only personality. The body is a personality, and subtle body also is another personality, subtle personality, and mind is a personality. How magnanimous, how mean, how small, how uncultured, uncivilized, how cultured, there is a personality. And we are talking about the person, very person. That is what we always say, everything is an object, it's not relative. Second person, you. Third, it's all relative. Only for me, when I address you, I say you. I can't say you everywhere like that. Relative. You, for me, is relative. I am, for you, second person, only relative. Isn't it? So third person also relative. Only when I talk to you about him, then it's third person. I talk to him, it is second person. I talk to Adiji directly, second person. When I talk to you about him, it's third person, relative. It's all relative. And what is the first person then? Understand? So this way we say, actually speaking, we use the word I always, first person. And then the second thing, that is where you have to come to the I always. Listen, for all of us, the self, the truth is available for understanding only in the mind. See, because the truth of everything, the only truth of everything, is the subtlest substance. Okay? Subtlest thing. And when you want to know the subtlest, you have to go to the much subtler manifestation, effect. The whole jagat is effect only. Causes, the existence, the reality of the whole, is the subtlest substance. And the whole universe is what? The effect. And the whole universe is constituent of both lot of gross things. Everything is gross. Anything is perceived as gross. Understand? So this all is gross. That is why you can't see here. And you have to go to subtlest manifestations. What is the subtlest of all the manifestations? Other than the mind, tell me. What is subtle? You have to understand the meaning of the word subtle here. To know the subtle, subtlest thing, you should go to subtle manifestation. Everything is gross. That is why I gave the example of mirror and the wood. Remember, wood also is earthen because it is a bark, it is cut from the bark of the tree which is born, no, which is grown from the earth, modified in form of earth in fact. What about the glass? What about the mirror? It's also earthen. A clay pot also, clay board also is earthen. But where can you see your face? Reflection of your face. Why? Because of the transparency. Understand? Everything is earthen. But the mirror alone is more transparent. Okay? So the more transparency it has the capacity to reflect. Similarly here, though the whole jagat which is full of gross and subtle things, understand? And you are interested in knowing the subtlest substance, which is the truth of the whole, gross universe also. The subtlest substance lends existence to the subtler and the grass and the grosser and the grossest universe. And you want to know that. And you analyze, oh, knowledge is subtler than the known. The source of knowledge, understand, is much subtler than the knowledge, the origin of knowledge. In fact, you are discovering the origin of knowledge, the source of knowledge, in the form of knower. The source, the origin, the subject of the knowledge is subtler than the knowledge, which is available for understanding as the very knower. Really speaking, what is knower? What is knower? Is an action. Swarupam. Okay, we say, from the standpoint of the known, we say the knower. That is actually the, can you say, I am the knower? It's all for understanding. It's a kindergarten class of Vedanta, and we start, there are two things, Atma, Anatma, subject, object, knower and the known. Anything known by you is different from you, the knower. You are the knower different from the known. What you see through your eyes, what you perceive through your senses, you are the known, and you are the knower different from all the known. Oh, subject, object. And in English grammar class we learn subject, object, common, adjective, all these things. Verb, etc., etc. That is a different thing. So, this, because it is our basic understanding, so it is akanksha paddhatihi. Akanksha paddhatihi is followed. Paddhati means the method of arriving at the unknown through the known. The method of arriving at the unknown through the known. It's called Akanksha Paddhatihi. So this all, we have our own limited understanding of the words object, subject, because whatever language you're speaking, and all of us know subject, object, verb, etc., complement, etc. So we use this. And really speaking, and you, it's all purely subtle understanding how, you know, our senses are also objects of knowledge. Knowledge, okay? They are available for thought perception, not for the sense perception. Like light is available as object of knowledge for the what? Sense perception. Sound is available for available as object of knowledge through our sense perception. Sound. Whereas a headache, you can't smell the headache, see the headache, hear the headache, doesn't make any noise, know it. Understand? So that is available for thought perception. That's also an object because it's known. So you understand that. So objects of knowledge available for sense perception, available only for thought perception. Then you reduce everything, and then therefore, oh, everything is known. Then where can I place the knower? Who is the knower then? Then can you say mind is the knower then? We always think, is the mind knower then? Okay, the knowledge which takes place itself is a thought which is a mind. We say the thought is in the mind against a problem. You locate it. On the mind, in the mind, it's all confusion. That is why very carefully we have to say the mind is nothing but many thoughts. And knowledge itself is a thought. And where is the knower? Who is the knower here? Where is the subject now? Where is the I? Where is the first person? Where is the Uttama Purusha? Why Sanskrit is the only bhasha where we say Uttama Purushaha? You know why? Who I see first? First. Third person. Uttama Purushaha. Really speaking, self is the Uttama Purushaha, not Anuttama. Uttama means what? The best. Superlative, that is, really speaking. Uttama is a superlative. Already. There's no comparative and then positive for that. No, opposite Anuttama. And then what is the best? You want to say the, you know, the superlative of the Uttama, because Anuttama. Then in Vishu Sahasranama, the word comes Anuttamo Duradarsho Kritagyo Kritiratmanaha. We have these words. Anuttamo Duradarsho. Anuttamaha is Bhagavan Nama. The most exalted. Even not the good, the best. They say Anuttamaha. But we think, you know, anything with an is what? Negative meaning. No, it's not Anuttama. Anuttamaha means the best. Uttamaha is good. Anuttamaha is the best. Really. And so we say the mind, and then we object for all the thoughts. Where can you place the who is subject here? All the thoughts are objects of knowledge. Evident. That is why, and then we have to stop at one place. All these thoughts are evident to me means what? I must be there. And I am. The knowledge that I am. And that is also object of knowledge. It's also a thought. And for which you have to sleep, you have to have an experience, and I have to tell you about this. Oh, it's also an object of knowledge. So what is the then? This is how the chit. Sat is available as the chit for recognition. Chit. That is why in Sanskritam, now I tell you, Alan Mahodaya, Uttamaha Purushaha, you are Uttamaha. Yeah. You can say, Aham. Aham. Atma Chaitanya, Aham Brahma Chaitanyam Asmi, therefore aham anuttamaha. And you can, when you say you are anuttamaha, we are all you. If you say you are dushta, aham uttama, aham anuttama, then there is no knowledge. Anyway, is it clear?
Just one question, which is the anantam. Is the knowledge of anantam an aspect of the appreciation of chit as the substance of substantive I? The anantam.
Yeah. Anantam means infinite, okay? Which is anantam means endlessness. Anta means end. Endlessness implies limitlessness. Limitlessness is the nature of the reality. Okay? And to say it is the nature of the reality, it is how you understand the reality being non-different from anything. Anantam is not every limit, it is limitless, it should be free from all limitations. It is time-wise limitless because it has no beginning, no end. Understand? Spatially limitless because it pervades everything as the very existence, as the cause. Understand? And this is because it pervades everything. There's a thing which is not this. Therefore it is free from object limitation. Therefore it is anantam. Understand? Anantam means anandaha. Anand in the sense being free from all limitations is limitlessness. That is why limitlessness is the nature of reality. It is something you have to understand, consciousness being free from time limitation, consciousness being free from spatial limitation, and consciousness being free from object limitation. Understand? The threefold things you have to understand here to understand the meaning of one word limitlessness. It is time-wise limitless. Understand? The chit, the consciousness, is time-wise limitless. How? There is no beginning, there is no end. It doesn't undergo any change. Then, because it is the very sat, existence of everything, it pervades everything. Because it pervades everything, there is no place where it is not. It is spatially limitless. Okay? And because it pervades everything, because spatially limitless, it is time-wise limitless, it pervades everything, there is nothing which is not this. It is the sat. The chit being the sat, the existence of everything, it lends existence to everything. It's the cause of everything. Therefore, nothing, it is not different from anything which is there. Like the flower is different from leaf, leaf is different from flower, the plant is different from this thing. All the differences will be resolved in, understand, in consciousness. Why? Because it's free from all forms of differences. In fact, I'm going to talk to you about those differences in another Upanishad class actually. We have sajatiya bhedaha, vijatiya bhedaha, swagata bhedaha. No, swagata bedaha, vigata vijatiya bedaha, sajatiya bedaha, all the differences. So it is the consciousness being the sat of everything, it is free from all differences, therefore it is what? Object is also limitless. Only then you can say limitlessness is a swarupam. Understand? This is what is anantam. So that which is there is everything. Resolving all the differences, lending its existence as the very sat, is this chit. And second vastu is not there. There is no second thing other than that. That's why sachidanandadvitiyosi. Sachidanandadvitiyosi. Tvam pratyaksham brahmasi. Jnanamayo vijnanamayosi. We chant this in the class. Okay. The secondless reality, which is there is the very sat and which is the chit and which is anantam. which is Anandaha. See, in being limited there is unhappiness, in being limitless there is sorrowlessness. That is why in being limited there is sorrow, in being limitless there is sorrowlessness. That's why being limitless is being sorrowless, and limitlessness is sorrowlessness, and sorrowlessness is happiness. That is why limitlessness is equal to happiness. That is why anantam is equal to anandaha. This is not a state of mind. It is a big confusion. How many people have this?
When you spoke about objective, the objective view, that's much easier to understand after you've spoken about anantam. Because that has to be objective, what you've just spoken about.
I'm really, as I say, I'm very clear about what I'm saying. I'm very clear about what I'm saying. Only thing is, because of this...
It's very clear, very clear.
Kaf prashna, huh?
Even though that, I mean, this may sound ridiculous. But even though there are, we perceive physical through the senses, the physical world, like sound and sight, is it all experience as thought?
Experiences? Yeah, thoughts.
Is that, just thoughts. We speak about smelling and tasting and seeing, but is that in fact experienced as thought?
Yeah, yeah. See, anything which is discussed is nothing but the experience. Okay, because no, without experience, then nothing. Whatever is discussed is in fact the experience.
So it's all just
thoughts.
Thought. Yeah.
Well, it's perceived by a thought, right? I mean, the thought perceives the experience.
No, no, perception itself is a thought. Perception itself is a thought. Mm-hmm. It's a mind.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That is what our Swamiji used to say. Don't worry about it. And we... Actually, I want to play that, if possible, what Swamiji says about the Bhagavad Gita thing. That is why we never encourage group discussions. We never encourage group discussions. Why? Because... group discussions, because it is not right. It's a methodical, systematic teaching. And teaching may result in many queries and doubts. Doesn't matter. Some queries can be answered, some doubts can be clarified, some can remain without being clarified, but the further continuous, committed study in due course of time will help you resolve all your doubts. The faith, the Shraddha and patience will help.
Okay. Om Purnamada Purnamidam.